Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Ella Jean Ehrlich.
I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
I'm Rosie.
This is Martina Navratilova.
This is Mark Forbes.
I'm Andy Murray.
You're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport. This is David Law coming to you from Garden Square at the Australian Open and Melbourne Park on day two of the year's first major tournament of 2018. I'm on my own today because Catherine Whittaker has unfortunately been taken unwell. She has gone to rest up a little bit ahead of day three and hopefully will be back with us on the podcast tomorrow. However, happy to say we do have guests and they are very good guests too. We've got Simon Briggs with us from The Telegraph, of course, our partners on the Tennis Podcast. And he is going to be talking us through the press conference that Novak Djokovic attended after his match. Of course, we discussed the situation with the player meeting that Novak Djokovic was part of and all the stories that came from that. We'll also be speaking to Jill Krabas, top 50 player, who is here with me a little later in the show to talk about the day's play. And there have been so many great matches to watch for us, and the return of Djokovic on court. He was quite fabulous in his win today over Donald Jung in straight sets. The return of Stan Wawrinka, who won through. Maria Sharapova performing very well in the first match she's played in 2 years here since the doping positive test that she had a couple of years ago here and the subsequent suspension. And of course we've had Johanna Konta in action. She was in very good form and went through pretty straightforwardly. Roger Federer was at his regal best in the evening, and Ash Barty, I've just been commentating on her for BBC Radio 5 Live, and she squeezed through against a big hitter in Sabalenka of Belarus, Marina Sabalenka, who I think we're going to be hearing a lot more of in the future. But where else could we start, really, other than the story that has been dominating conversation here at the Australian Open over the last 36 to 48 hours? We told you about the gist of what we knew from the article in the Daily Mail by Mike Dixon about how Novak Djokovic had basically held court in the players' meeting, the ATP players' meeting, and had asked officials to leave so that all the players could talk amongst themselves and have their own private conversation. Normally, of course, that is a meeting that involves the ATP officials, and they were told all about the prize money that the Australian Open hopes to increase to over the next 5 years, doubling the prize money, and various other elements of housekeeping from the ATP with Ross Hutchins and Chris Kermode there. What has happened today, certainly in terms of the newspapers reporting, is that the word boycott was used as a possibility going forwards if maybe the players didn't get exactly what they wanted at this tournament. Now, obviously, those are very strong words, and they were addressed by Novak Djokovic after his straight sets win over Donald Jung, and he was asked whether it was true that the subject of a boycott had come up in that player meeting.
No boycott, no.
Good. Can you clarify for the non-players what your issues are and the way you see forward with them?
Well, I saw that some of you have written a story that has, you know, been a little bit exaggerated, and you've taken things out of the context, and I saw that you've portrayed me as someone that is very greedy and asks for more money and wants to boycott. But, you know, I respect your, you know, freedom and decisions to do that, but not much of what you've wrote is true. What happened is that we players just wanted to have us players talk about certain topics. I don't think there is anything unhealthy about that. We get together, 100 players get together two or three times in a whole year. And this is one of the places where we get together. So, you know, we wanted to use this opportunity to speak about certain subjects and see how everyone, you know, reacts to that. And I guess see what opinions are. There was no decisions being made. There was no talks about boycott or anything like that. So that's all I can say, really. I mean, there's nothing much else to add.
What are your thoughts on unionizing? You know that?
Listen, you know, I know that you guys are trying to take this forward several steps, you know, and obviously you're talking about union, you talk about boycott, you talk about radical, you know, decisions to make and move so we can get financial compensations the way we deserve it, but there was no talks about that. And again, I'm saying it was subjects that we never get a chance to talk about in such a large group. That's all it was. I never have intentionally thrown anybody out of the room. Everything was done in a very normal, polite way. Players wanted to stay alone. It was up to 100 players in the room. We talked about things that we talked about, and that's all. And in the future, we might have more of this kind of, you know, get-togethers and just to see where we are, because you never get to hear what majority of the players really thinks between the players. So that was the whole purpose of us getting together.
And the majority was more or less agreed on what either you or someone else was saying, or there were people saying black and other people saying white.
Well, what do you think?
Well, I think it's not important what I think. It's more important what you think.
I think, and I keep it to myself.
You've had support from some quarters, like Andy Roddick and Judy Murray, who said there's merit in the idea of a players' union, and perhaps even between the two tours. I mean, what is your view on that, for instance?
Right now, the things are as they are. You know, if I speak, you know, further about any of the subjects that you've mentioned, obviously it might be taken out of the context, and I don't want that. So my focus is on this tournament at the moment. I'm really happy that we got a chance, all of us players, to speak together in one place and in one moment for an hour, and that's all it was.
Novak, you and the players, are you still in favour of trying to get a greater percentage of the revenue from tournaments? Is that an issue? Because it seems like tournaments are increasing their revenue every year, and maybe the players...
Everybody's trying to do their best. So, I mean, we're here at the Australian Open, and they always try to compensate the players in the best possible way. And Craig Tiley was always, you know, trying to accommodate players to make them feel like at home and make them feel respected and valued. And so, I mean, things are going in the right direction. Obviously, you know, the question that you asked me, you can ask president of ATP. I'm part of the council, but I don't sit on these negotiation tables. You know, obviously, before you get anything to be voted on the board, it has to go through council. It's not only me that makes some calls, far from that. I'm just glad that I'm part of it, that I can contribute to a better sport today and in the future, and hopefully the next generation will even have a better sport.
You also know the other side, having been tournament director in Belgrade.
Yeah.
Having owned the tournament.
Well, it's quite different being tournament director. You know, my uncle was tournament director in Belgrade, 250 event and Grand Slam. Is quite different. But, you know, ATP is an association of players and tournaments. And, you know, it has worked like that for the last 40 plus years in this kind of a harmony, so to say. It's not easy, because a lot of times there is a conflict of interest, but everybody's trying to do their best.
When you say no boycott of the Australian Open, are you saying that that wasn't a subject that you raised at the meeting?
That wasn't a subject I raised, no.
Did you have a lawyer present with you?
No.
So that's Novak Djokovic, the response from him in his press conference, which we'd all been waiting for. It had been the subject of conversation over the last 36 hours. And the journalists obviously had there a chance to question him. And one of those was Simon Briggs, our Telegraph partners on the Tennis Podcast. And I was joined straight after the press conference by Simon and asked him what he made of what Novak had to say.
Well, he said there was no lawyer. Well, you know, we had our sources for that story, and then just looking at Ubi Tennis, you know, an Italian website that we all know reasonably well, which is quite solid informationally. They've got a source here saying Djokovic even brought a law professor to explain to them this is a huge thing and that they all need to unite to make it happen. You know, we think we know quite a lot about that.
So, I guess what we could be dealing with is a question of semantics to some degree, an interpretation as to what is a lawyer.
And I think possibly if the lawyer was there, then the lawyer might have said, hypothetically, if you want to boycott the Australian Open, then these are the things you'd have to do. And so specifically what you'd have to do is have a different body, because you can't legally coordinate a boycott through the ATP. This is a central point. And so I think, you know, Novak probably can say it's a structural issue that I'm raising. I mean, he hasn't even admitted that, has he? He really didn't want to talk about it. I think everyone knows that it's a bit toxic. And some of the power plays that have been going on in the last few days have maybe been directed at Novak and what we could call his co-conspirators, who we have a pretty good idea who they are, but most of them have been reluctant to talk about it as well. Probably the most outspoken one was Viktor Troitsky. He said, Novak's right, given what the Grand Slams earn, what we are being paid is ridiculous. But then it's a difficult argument to make fly in the public domain when you consider that the winner of Wimbledon gets £2 million and the first round loser, what, 35, 37? Thousand. The thing is that the people who probably need the money are the ones lower down the scale, and I think Novak might even have been making that point in the meeting, from what I hear. They're the ones, and actually Kevin Anderson said this, his vice president. Kevin Anderson said yesterday the conditions have improved up to number 100, and then we're trying to push that to 150, 200. Now, the awkwardness that comes in here is that, well, how's the Slam going to do that? Because these guys aren't really playing. They might play qualifying, but they're certainly not going to make main draw. And then you run into the great head-scratching conundrums of a sport in which there are seven governing bodies, four slams, two tours, and the ITF who makes the rules. And that is why it's just a complete labyrinth for everyone.
It is. Andy Roddick, incidentally, who we brought up yesterday, as somebody who kind of went through a similar process to this, maybe not quite as dramatic in a player meeting as such, but certainly has long argued that he believes that tennis players should be getting a bigger piece of the Grand Slam revenue pie. He tweeted today that he's always thought that a player union, a singular body that represents the interests of the players, is a good idea as far as he's concerned. But at the same time, I spoke to Mats Wilander earlier, who was a big part of setting up the ATP World Tour as we see it today, the 50% partners, tournaments and players. And you know, he said he feels that, yes, you need to hear all the voices, but they've always pretty much been able to roll along well together. So it's an interesting one, isn't it? And I guess we watch this space.
Yeah, and if you look at the figures for the overall prize money, they have increased. They haven't quite doubled in 10 years, but it's not far off. The sport is getting much better, more lucrative for the leading players. Yes, life is still tough, low down the scale, and we're going to soon be hearing from the independent review panel about what that means on the ground in terms of corruption and the daily trials of playing futures and challenges. But things are getting better, and you'd have to say that it's pretty confrontational to take the microphone at that players meeting and ask the officials from the ATP to leave the room, and now everyone who was involved in it sounds like they're trying to row back, and not surprisingly, because they probably, in the political sense, it was a bit of an overstep. And also Novak said today, I've never thrown anybody out of the room. Well, that's semantics, isn't it? He might not have thrown them out of the room. He just asked them politely to leave. I mean, this we can say with certainty.
Yeah, it is an interesting one, and the transcripts are available, the reports in Simon's piece. You'll be able to read exactly what everybody said, and it's interesting, and we'll see which way it goes from here.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So that's Novak Djokovic off the court. What about on the court? Because he has basically come back today and played the first match that we've seen him play since Wimbledon, which is extraordinary when you think about it. It's been that long since we've seen Novak Djokovic on a tennis court. He was up against Donald Jung today. He won through in straight sets. I personally thought he was absolutely fantastic. I'm joined here by Jill Krabas, former top 50 player. I was really surprised with the form that he managed to find this quickly.
Yeah, I was too, especially because the way that he's been talking, that he wasn't sure if he was going to be 100%, and he was basically waiting for the first round to see how well he felt on the court. And he said his practices were going pretty well, but I was really impressed too, because Donald Jung is a really tricky player, left-handed, and can be very consistent, very aggressive. But the way Djokovic handled himself and the way he was moving around the court, I was impressed too.
He had the sleeve on that I imagine he's trying to keep it warm. Yeah. and stop it moving about too much, the joints, etc., because you know elbow problems are horrible for tennis players, aren't they? I mean, it's a long time he's been out.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's smart. I mean, I mean, he knows how to take care of himself, but I think that's a smart choice, because when you have any sort of injury or any sort of problem, you really do get a little bit hesitant when you're moving around the court or when you're swinging the racket. So I think that just gave him a little bit extra security, so he didn't have to think about it as much, and I think it allowed him to swing a little bit more freely.
One of the things I noticed before he went out there, he was deep in conference for quite a while with both Radek Stepanek and Andre Agassi, his coaching team here. I imagine even as great as Djokovic is as a player that has done this much in the game, there's going to be doubts, and there's a psychological element to all this, isn't there, the comeback?
Well, you're absolutely correct. That coaching team's not going to have anything to do with technique or his game plan or what he needs to change. It's going to be that extra boost in confidence that he's going to need. Or even if you're not, I mean, you're not going to wake up feeling great every single day. So it's just that extra support from your coaches, just reminders that, look, you know, you don't feel great today, but you can still find a way to win. It's all those just small little details. And I think he feels good with them, with Agassi and Stepanek around him. So, I mean, they give him that extra energy.
He's got Gael Monfils next. How about that? Second round.
That's going to be a fun match to watch. I mean, you know what you're going to get. You're going to get some entertainment with Monfils, but does he have the belief that he can beat Djokovic? I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, that's going to be very interesting. Another one who came back today, Stan Wawrinka.
Yeah.
He didn't look as convincing as Djokovic. He's got the knee problem. But I have to say, he did a lot better than I expected. He managed to come through and win in four sets today against Ricardos Berankis. Won the first two 6-3, 6-4, and it was Well, there was some trademark Stan in there, the booming backhand, the authority on the court, barrel-chested as he always is. Looked in good physical condition, apart from the fact that he still says he has this pain in the knee. And he did say, I was getting tired, you know, as the match was going on, didn't have as much energy. You can't necessarily replicate a match situation, can you, in practice, if you've been out for a few months?
No, you really can't. It's impossible. And I think a lot of coaches try to, but you really can't. You can't do it because you'll never have that, like, you can't recreate the pressure that's added when you're actually playing a tournament and playing against these other guys in a Grand Slam. So it doesn't surprise me that he did get a little bit of tired, because when you don't have that extra match play and that extra pressure, it's just completely different. So, but I mean, you know, he's a strong guy. I think he'll bounce back. It does depend how the knee feels after that. After that first match, but I thought he looked better than I expected as well. I thought he was moving better than I expected, and he plays a little bit more flashier than Djokovic, so it's not a surprise that he struggled a little bit more than Djokovic in the first round, but I thought he actually did. He handled himself well.
Yep. So he's through. Stan Wawrinka still continues. He won through 7-6 in the fourth set in the end. Another player returning, and that was Maria Sharapova. Somebody, I know she came back last year, but she hasn't played this tournament for a couple of years since the doping suspension that she endured after testing positive here 2 years ago. She came out, and there was a little wobble in the second set, but she won through pretty comfortably in the end against the fantastically named Tatiana Maria. So you did have the two surnames on the scoreboard at the same time. Maria against Sharapova. I loved that. I mean, that's how small my mind is. But it was, you know, it's a good start for her, isn't it? And she's got some stiff tests to come. Anastasia Sevastova next, maybe Angelique Kerber third round.
Yeah, that could be tricky. I think it's good that she got through that first round too, because, you know, it's her first time back since the positive doping that she had here. So I think that was good for her to get through that first round. I think it'll make her feel more comfortable going into the second round. And but you said that blip she had. I mean, she always has blips in her matches, in my opinion. Like there are moments in many of her matches where all of a sudden she'll have like a weak service game or she'll make a couple errors that we're not used to. But what's so impressive about her is her competitiveness and how she's always able to bounce back from those moments. And that's what she did again in this first round. But when it gets to a little bit later in the draw and more consistent players, I think it'll be interesting. Like, she can't afford to have those blips. But, I think a lot of people are happy to see her back.
We saw Johanna Konta today win very handily. We've been talking about how many players could win this title. Yeah. I think we're up to about 20 now. Is Konta one of those for you?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I mean, she has the game. She has the capability. I think she definitely has the confidence to do it. And I think all the women in the draw know that it is pretty open, and it's going to basically come down to who can handle that pressure the best, in my opinion, because everyone knows that there's a chance that they could win.
So which woman are you going for?
I chose Wozniacki. I think, and it's not just because, you know, she had an unbelievable end of the year last year. She won the finals, but overall, she was one of the most consistent players throughout the year last year. And I think mentally now, she's ready to be like, okay, I can win a Grand Slam. I think before it was in her mind, like, can I do it? And it was always that thing that was hanging over her head that I haven't done it yet. But I just feel like she's in a better frame of mind mentally to be like, okay, it's time.
Yeah, but I've gone for Simona Halep. She twisted her ankle today. I mean, that's not fair. I chose that before she twisted her ankle.
I know, but that doesn't mean anything. I mean, it depends how bad it is, but she could bounce back, and it could have been nothing. We don't know, because after she twisted her ankle, she bounced back, won the second set 6-1, and didn't seem to that it was a problem then. Now, you know, the repercussions of that, maybe it'll swell up a little bit later, so we'll have to wait and see. But, you know, she's a tough woman. I think she's going to be okay.
Oh, you made me feel a little bit better. That's good. I've got her beating Yulia Gerges in the final. Huh? What do you think?
That's a big call. I like that call, actually, because I think Julia can actually go pretty far this year. I think talking about mentality, I think her belief has gone up like 1,000%. I think she feels like now she belongs in that top echelon consistently. So I like that call, David.
That Roger Federer is still quite good at tennis, isn't
he?
Yeah,
he's not bad. I have either him or Dimitrov winning.
Do you?
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't. I mean, it's hard to root against Roger, but I wouldn't mind Dimitrov winning a slam.
Today we had Will Ferrell and Will Ferrell, isn't it? Sorry, the comedian, the actor, and John McEnroe and Roger Federer in a three-way interview on court.
That was hilarious. I think I felt like Will Ferrell didn't quite know what to ask him, and then Roger looked a little bit uncomfortable because he wasn't quite sure how to answer the question. But they had a lot of fun out there. It was fun to see.
It was also fun afterwards. Federer did a press conference and was talking about why he gives so much in press conferences and the responsibility he feels. And he said, I do feel sometimes a bit sorry for some of the players because I think that they get burned a little, maybe something gets misinterpreted in the press conference or something, and they feel not so comfortable. I mean, I don't know, how did you feel about that? Can you see that from a player's perspective, that maybe there's a lack of confidence to really truly be themselves?
I definitely see that, yeah. And I mean, a long time ago I got burned as well.
What happened?
To be honestly, I can't remember what it was about, but my parents were not very happy about it. And it was when I was really young. My family wasn't very happy about it. But I have to say, like, then I've had interviews with journalists where it's been exactly what I said, and the content was great. The context was perfect. And so you do tend to learn to trust, I think, certain people. And then you do start to get a little bit more free. But I think, so I can understand some players, I feel they sometimes feel a little bit protective of themselves, and they don't really want to reveal too much. And I do think sometimes when you're interviewing players, it can get a little bit robotic. But I know, David, you and I talked about this a little bit earlier. I think in Roger's case, I feel like he does a really good job of explaining exactly what he's trying to get across. And I think the journalists in the room, when they're listening to him, do a really good job of taking their time to listen to what he has to say. And I think that's why he's such a great ambassador of the sport and such a good example, because I think he, by exuding that, I think he can allow other players to feel more comfortable to kind of reveal a little bit more and not be so afraid that something might be taken out of context. Because in my opinion, from when I was young, from that point on, I actually had a great experience with journalists and the people that I talked to. So I think journalists are being respectful of that a little bit more often, I think.
Yeah, it does take a little bit of time, doesn't it? So we very much have enjoyed the day's play. I should just say, on the subject of predictions, I had a look at all the people who'd entered our Tennis Podcast Predictions Challenge, and one of the questions was, who's going to win the rematch between Catherine Whittaker and David Law? We had a match once 3 years ago. Jill and I lost 12-10 in a champions tiebreak. 21 people think Catherine's going to win, and 5 think I'm going to win. That's, I mean...
But for what? Like, to win? To
play
win?
Tennis.
Oh, to play? You're going to actually go play?
Yeah, it's not that big a surprise. I mean... I know I'm not very...
Can I be the umpire?
I know I'm not very athletic looking, Jill.
No, I know you are athletic looking. I just didn't know you played. This is the first time I've heard of this out of the years I've known you. How is this the first time we could be hitting? We could have been hitting this whole time.
Can you train me up?
I love hitting. We could have been hitting.
You can train me to beat Catherine Whittaker.
Yeah, well, I don't need to train you. I don't think I need to train you.
21 people out of 26 think I'm going to lose.
I can give you some tips, but I've never seen her play either.
She's too good for me so far, anyway. In our short history, we've only played one match in 10 years, and the rematch is coming soon. And now Jill Krabas, top 50 player.
I have confidence in you. I'm going to be your 6th supporter.
Yeah, and my coach, I tell you. I can't wait for that. The order of play tomorrow is out. Nick Kyrgios is going to be playing on the Hisense Arena once again. We've got Rafael Nadal in action. I think Grigor Dimitrov, I think he is playing the night session tomorrow as well. There's loads and loads of good matches to look forward to on the order of play tomorrow. So do go and check out the various websites and have a look at what you want to watch. We will be back as normal, with the Tennis Podcast post play. I do want to say just a couple of quick corrections and explanations about one commenter said in the first podcast of this tournament was we were talking about Bruce McAvaney, the great Australian commentator, wondering where he was. Apparently he's not enjoying the best of health just at the moment. So that's the reason he's not commentating for Channel 7 just at the moment. We wish him a very quick recovery. Also, I got a factual error yesterday when I said that Gilles Simon was the player council president. Of course, he's not. It's Novak Djokovic. My head was scrambled, so excuse me for getting that wrong. We have been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport. Gilles, lovely to have you with us. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. It's
thank you
pleasure.
For agreeing to be my coach in my rematch against Catherine Whittaker. We've also been sponsored by the La Manga Club, who are responsible for making Catherine Whittaker the tennis player that she is after her amazing holiday this summer. And she thinks she is going to beat me. Well, we'll see. We are brought to you, of course, by our executive producers, Triple S, Melanie Bowes, tennisballs.com, and our mascot is Charlie the Ferret. Would you believe we have a sponsor that is a ferret?
I think that's awesome.
I know. It is awesome. I tell you, I'll show you a picture of Charlie the Ferret. He's the coolest. So we'll be back very soon. Catherine Whittaker, get well soon. Hopefully she will be back with us on the Tennis Podcast tomorrow, but at least it has meant that we've been able to have Jill with us, and we've had you with us listening. Thank you for joining us. We'll speak to you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.